Welcome to Hype, episode 140. My name is Selena. I'm back with Pam and Merima this week for another week of entertainment news stories. First of all, we are really sorry that we weren't here last week, but we're back this week, and we have a lot of news stories to talk about, all of them real. So don't worry about anything you may or may not have seen on hypebull.com that didn't seem quite legit, because we're not going to touch on that here. So you're fine. It's not April 1st anymore. You're okay. Before we get into the show, we want to remind you of our contact information. You can find us on Twitter at HypeableHype. You can find us on Instagram at HypeableHype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can send us an email, hype@hypeable.com. And of course, we have our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, which is where we release our bonus features, and we release the bonus audio from this episode, which this week will be a spoiler-free discussion of the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. I'm only halfway through. Pam has seen it all, so we're gonna attempt to talk about it and and give our initial reactions to it. So if you are interested, you can head over to patreon.com/hypepodcast, and you can read more about how to get access to the bonus content, and we hope you check that out. Otherwise, you can just listen to the show and you're good. So the first thing we're going to do is How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Merima, what have you been doing?
Well, I listened to another podcast. I listened to S-Town, which is the brand new podcast from This American Life and Serial that is like breaking the internet right now. And everyone's saying it's the greatest podcast ever made. And it's like a really innovative use of the form and la la la. So I love both of those shows. I thought I would check it out. I've listened to the whole thing. Absolutely no spoilers in this. I thought the podcast was really beautiful and so well produced, and like one of the best podcasts I've heard for sure. I also think it was like super unethical in many ways. Yeah, like I said, no spoilers, because I don't want to like ruin that experience for anyone. But episodes 3 and 6, for those who have listened, were the ones that I bumped on, particularly episode 3. They sort of record at this event that I thought they didn't justify why that was necessary. And then in episode 6, they reveal some off the record information that, again, I was like, I don't think you have justified this as well as you think you have justified this. So yeah, it's super interesting. I would love if you guys were going to listen to it so we could discuss it sometime, but anyone else who has, feel free to give me a shout on Twitter and we can talk about it more. And then I have also been reading a bunch of stuff, which I will do super, super quickly because I'll probably talk about them more in my Patreon video next time. But of interest to this podcast, I just read The Upside of Unrequited, which is the companion book to podcast fave Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda, by Becky Albertalli. Oh. This is out in April, and it's a book about the character Abby, who moved from DC in Simon Versus. It's about like the friends that she left behind, and it's super interesting. It does some really cool things with continuing with like LGBT representation for people who like that in the book, but also deals with body image quite explicitly. And it's really funny and very sweet. And if you liked Simon Versus, then you will definitely love this. Like, it's the same tone, it's the same feel, you know, while being like new enough to kind of justify. And then I read The Secret Science of Magic by Melissa Keel, who is an Australian author who I've mentioned before, who I love. That is a super sweet YA sort of coming of age romance. She writes these really beautiful love stories, and really beautiful just relationships. There's a great friendship in that I really liked. And then I'm currently reading the second book in Rick Riordan's Apollo series, his new series about Apollo, which is called The Trials of Apollo, The Dark Prophecy, dun dun dun. And I'm like quite enjoying this series. My favorite of his was definitely the second Percy Jackson ones, Heroes of Olympus, because they're a little more adult. And Trial of Apollo kind of fits in that because there are some of the same characters, so that's good. And it's also a little different because he's talking about like the god of Apollo loses his powers and then has to like hang out with the demigod. So it's not another like demigod has to do things for a god type story, which he does really well, but is basically the plot of every single one of his books. So, yeah, they're all super fun. Like, if you like Rick Riordan, you will definitely like that. And that is out in May, I'm pretty sure. So I'll have finished it by next week and I can report back.
Cool. What have you been doing, Pam?
Oh, well, you know, just going to the movies as always. I went to see Power Rangers and I'm really sad that, Selena, you haven't seen it yet because I know that you were the only person that was, like, excited about it on this panel.
I heard it's really good and I feel so
I've
vindicated.
Heard it's really good and I'm confused.
Wait, you saw it too?
No. I keep seeing these reviews that are like, it's the greatest movie of the year.
No, it's really, really good. Let me just tell you guys, like, okay, we grew up on Power Rangers in this house. Like, because, well, also I have, like, a lot of brothers, but, like, my brother, like, my full brother, that sounds really weird, but, like, you know, I have like half siblings and then my one brother. Anyway, this is like the only thing he was obsessed with when we were younger. So when we would like split TV time, I would pick something like the Gummy Bears and he would pick Power Rangers. And it's the reason he got into like Taekwondo and like all this stuff. So we're very, very familiar with the franchise up until I think he watched it through like Turbo Rangers or something. So like, cause like there's all these incarnations. And so Power Rangers, like the movie is one of those things where it's like, you're really excited for it, but you also like tread with caution. And if you're one of those people, like everybody I have talked to who was obsessed with it when they were younger is like so, so happy with the way this movie turned out. I will say that I was pleasantly surprised that like, this was like, it was like hokey when it needed to be hokey, which is good. Cause that's kind of like a tribute to the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but it was also like serious when it needed to be serious. There's some great little throwbacks in there to the original series, which is going to like, that's going to please like fans. But like, more importantly, I was really surprised by the fact that they didn't skimp on the backstory or like the character development. Everybody was amazing, but like, shout out to Billy because he's like the best. And it was just really cool the way that they like, kind of like infused also like issues that teens are facing today into like this new like rebooted Power Rangers lore, and it sets things up for probably a sequel or two. So I'm really excited to see what they do with the franchise, but like everybody involved in it was really great, and I walked out of it like really, really, really happy with what they did with the story.
That's really good to hear.
Just really quickly, because I know we have to move on, I haven't done any music on here lately, so I just wanted to recommend Bleachers is Back. It's Jack Antonoff's band. You might know him from his days in Fun or like in his many collaborations with people like Lord or Taylor Swift. He has a new single out called Don't Take the Money, and I really, really like this a lot. I'm really excited to see what else he does in music, because he's just got a really great sound and a really fun vibe. So I'm really digging that right now. If you're looking for something to listen to and you haven't checked that out yet.
Cool. And then me just really quickly, I'm hyping about something that, you know, I can only say that I'm hyping about it, and that's about it. So if you've been on Twitter at all, you know that like all of the entertainment journalists kind of lost their minds when the screeners for American Gods, the first four episodes, were released. American Gods is, of course, the adaptation of Neil Gaiman's book of the same name, starring Ricky Whittle as Shadow Moon. That's coming to Stars in later this month. In April, and I've only seen the first episode. Now, obviously, reviews are embargoed, so I'm not going to be like, this is what happens, even though you can also just read the book if you want to know what happens. But what I can say is that the pilot is really good. I would have loved to have kept watching, but I spend most of my free time editing this show, and otherwise I have none. So I do what I can. But if you've read the book, then you will be so happy. And if you haven't read the book, then it doesn't matter, because the story is great. And Ricky Whittle is fantastic. He was obviously on The 100. That's how I know him. He's really, really cool. It's you guys should and are probably already very, very excited. So highly recommend American Gods, coming out later this month. So yeah, hyping about gods in America. Good times. Moving on into the news now, we have an exciting lineup today, and I think the first story in the doc is kind of like, feels like it's an April Fool's, but very happy it's not.
Yes.
This is so awesome.
From gods to queens, we have news this week, or just last week, that Beyoncé is in talks to join the Lion King live action adaptation. I guess proving that this is really the only one of these that like we can all get excited about. We already know that James Earl Jones is coming back and Donald Glover is set to play Simba. And now apparently Beyonce is in talks to voice the role of Nala, which means that Beyonce gets to sing Can You Feel the Love Tonight, which means that we will all collectively die at the same moment that we watch this. So negotiations are still underway, and apparently they are trying to do everything they can to get her, Variety is reporting. So they're adjusting the schedules, and you know, as we know, she's pregnant right now, so as the world knows, so they have to work around that. But yeah, this is very exciting. I am so on board for this, and basically a lot of happy yelling in shoes, I think, from this news.
Yeah, I agree. This is kind of like too good to be true in a way. It's really, really cool. Like the queen, it's literally going to be a queen.
Yeah. And
spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, we were already excited about this because like it's being directed by Jon Favreau, so who did The Jungle Book, which we all loved. So all signs are pointing to optimistic for The Lion King, which is good because some other live action adaptations were not great / necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See our last episode of the podcast.
Well, here's something else some of you might feel like is not necessary. For better or worse, we're going to get the new Spider-Man movie. I'm actually kind of like into this idea. I feel like I'm going to regret saying that later, but the trailers look really fun, in my opinion. So we do have a new trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming, which comes out later this summer, and it gives us a little bit more of a feel for not only Tom Holland's Spider-Man / Peter Parker's like six Spidey moves, but we also kind of get a little bit more of a feel for the kind of things that he'll be dealing with, like on the like emotional side of things and like the dramatic side of things. Tony Stark also features very heavily in this trailer, which I know is probably making Marima's eye twitch.
How did
she's
know?
Not a big fan, but but it definitely looks like he's going to have like a much bigger role in Spider-Man's progress this time around than I think anybody ever really thought, because he's very heavily featured in this second teaser trailer, which is a lot longer than the first one we got. So if you want to check that out, it's over on Hypeable.com. And we also got a tiny little bit more information as to the future of Spider-Man in terms of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. As fans of the series will know, it actually took a lot of negotiating for Spider-Man to be able to join the Avengers over at the MCU. And after his stint in the Avengers that's coming up, the contract negotiations will have to be renegotiating. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Spider-Man won't ever be featured after, you know, these standalones and his involvement in Avengers after this fact, but it is kind of going to take a bit more renegotiating because nobody really wants to lose their ties to big superhero franchises. And it was a really big deal when Disney was able to finagle this crossover from Sony. So just something to keep an eye on if you're really invested in the idea of Spider-Man being part of the MCU. It's something that we might not get after this. It's not really set in stone. So,
yeah. I mean, it's funny because I feel like, you know, you said that like you, I don't know if you were just referring to the three of us or in general. I feel like there's so much excitement about Spider-Man Homecoming and I'm still struggling to get on board with that excitement. Like, I don't have a natural attachment to Spider-Man and nothing that I've seen from this movie has me in any way excited. Like, I'm literally like, I'm excited about Thor. And I'm excited about Guardians of the Galaxy, but not as much as I thought I would be. And then, like, I don't even know what else in Marvel I'm excited about right now. It's really strange. Like, I'm really sort of, it's obviously Black Panther, but it's kind of fizzling out a little bit for me. And Spider-Man, unfortunately, isn't really looking like it'll bring me something that I need in my life. But at the same time, sort of from a solidarity standpoint, I think it would be a real shame if the sequel could be the last appearance for him, because I know there were like a trilogy of movies planned, so that would kind of cut their plans short, which I know would upset some people. So I hope they get to finish out this arc so they don't have to like, I don't know. I feel like there's been enough failing Spider-Man movies. They don't need to be more. I feel like they should be allowed to do what they want to do, and then people finally have their perfect Spider-Man.
That's a really good point. You know? That's a really good point because I think a lot of people's frustration with the series, and this is kind of what I was getting at. I feel like people are excited about the trailer, but they're also like not as excited as they could be because at the end of the day, it's just a reboot of Peter Parker's story, which we've seen two different times already. So yeah, you're right. Like it would really be unfortunate if like Marvel, like MCU was really the one that did Peter Parker justice. And then all of a sudden it was snatched back away into the hands of Sony, which has already had not one shot, but two shots to kind of get his story right. And as far as like Marvel, I totally get like your hesitancy. I feel like you've been burned by Marvel before. And I feel like a lot of people have. So it kind of gets harder and harder to get excited about things or like get your hopes put up so high when there is the possibility of being let down. So I think that you're being very smart about this. You go in with like low expectations, and if it's really good, you could be like, you guys, I was wrong. It was the best. La, 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 la.
It worked for Power Rangers, right?
I think so. This is like my new thing. I tread with cautious optimism, and then everything turns out better than I thought. So it's fine.
Well, I think the trailer looks really good. So, like, I'm on board for Spider-Man. And Selena, you're not really a Marvel fan anyway. So, like, anymore, because, like, Pam...
I mean, I have no attachment to Marvel, so I'm just kind of taking it one movie at a time.
Yeah,
you know?
So, yeah, exactly. I think that the excitement for Spider-Man, I follow, like, all of superhero Twitter. I think the excitement for Spider-Man Homecoming is definitely higher than it was for... like for the Amazing Spider-Man, people are so thrilled about Marvel having their hands on Spider-Man again. And honestly, I mean, I do not doubt that they will get their trilogy. It'll just be a matter of Marvel like sucking it up and paying them the money that they want, basically, which is why they won't have signed off on it already, because they'll want to see like how it does and it's going to do really well. So Spider-Man fans, like, I would not be concerned. It's definitely just going to be a money thing. Like, that's all of the contract negotiations. And Marvel are kind of famous for, like, signing their stars for record-long contracts for, like, record-low money. So they obviously don't like dishing it out, but they will just have to. Yeah, I think the Homecoming trailer looks very fun if you're a Spider-Man fan. Like, I'll see this movie, I guess. Like, I don't have a particular attachment to Spider-Man, but I greatly enjoy Marvel, as everyone knows. So I will probably check it out. I hate Iron Man, so that's annoying, like Pam said. But the trailer.
He's such a big part of this damn movie.
Yeah, he's a big part of everything, so whatever. But I think the trailer looks fun, and I think you get a slightly different look at the character in this than we got in the teaser for sure. So, you know, maybe they'll do something, I mean, not different, but... new, like maybe they'll do something slightly interesting with it, and and we'll see.
Yeah, and you know, if Marvel needs money, they can always just cut back on their diversity, since that is apparently what is crippling their sales. Mm-hmm. If you ask the comics department. That's unfortunately not a news story, though maybe it should have been. But moving on to something that is vaguely Marvel-related and definitely has induced some strong opinions of varying degrees. Some people are excited, some people are skeptical, and some people are downright very mad about this possibility that Joss Whedon, Buffy creator, Avengers director, is in talks to direct and write the Batgirl movie for DC. I mean, first of all, some interesting background on this. I know that Whedon is sort of has wanted to make the jump from Marvel to DC for a while. He is obviously very big into superheroes, and at one point I think he was doing some kind of like original project that was basically Victorian era female Batman, was how he described it. I think it was last Comic-Con of the year before. I don't really know what happened to that project, but I'm guessing his attachment to Batgirl and Catwoman and these characters runs deep. So I guess responses to this have been interesting to watch, because I think that there is... taking aside the worry that, oh, can Joss Whedon write a good female-led thing, which I think, you know, that's obviously, like, I think a matter of taste as opposed to an actual fact. But I think there's a general feeling that when we're talking about female-led things, we should be prioritizing female creators. I think that's sort of the first thing that pops to mind, is if we have a female director for Wonder Woman, we have a female director for Captain Marvel, wouldn't we give a Batgirl to a female creator? When that is sort of done for me, because I that's sort of my initial thing, is that I'm like, obviously that should be what happens. When that is said and done, you guys know that I am a fan of Joss Whedon, and I think that what Joss Whedon does is great. And I think for me, the general sort of we need more female creators is a criticism that I would apply to Hollywood in general. And female-led films should have female directors, but I also would like to say that that should also be the case for things like, funnily enough, Avengers and Justice League and Batman and other men in superheroes. So I think that's sort of a part of a larger issue. And when speaking about Joss Whedon specifically, I think it's great and I'm excited. I do think that I wish he would do something original, because I like his original stuff, but I'm not in charge of Hollywood. So I'm not going to moan about this. I'm just going to be great. That's good. I'm excited. And I also want more females in creative positions. So that's where I stand on it. How do you guys feel?
Well, just before we jump into that, the like female Batman comic thing you were talking about was actually a Dark Horse comic that he was doing. It was at the Dark Horse panel I covered a couple years ago at Comic-Con. So I don't think it's come out yet, but yeah, that's what he was doing.
He might still be doing.
Yeah. I don't think there's been any word on that. Cool. It was like in the very early stages. And I think they just had like a kind of mock-up of a cover and the title and then the log line of like Victorian Batman, but female and gothic stuff. So people are excited about that. But yeah, I guess keep an eye out for that, or we might be able to have a look and see if there's any movement. On the news specifically, I mean, sure, Joss Whedon, I'm very mixed on. As people know, I loved Buffy, like I loved a lot of his TV stuff. The Avengers were like objectively terrible films.
Unless if you're me and you like them.
Well, sure. I mean, they're really bad movies with like really appalling representations of women in particular, which I found to be like very problematic considering how bad Marvel is in general. So like these ensemble films are the only chance that a lot of the female characters get to actually like literally be on the screen. So especially Age of Ultron, which I have 1,000 issues with, which like I will not go into. So I am somewhat skeptical of this based on that, because like I have not seen proof that Joss Whedon can really successfully do a superhero movie. But hey, I mean, I wish Joss Whedon wasn't like the go-to like quote unquote feminist for when they want to do like this kind of project, and it's super sad that they feel like they need to attach his name to it, I guess. And I mean, I also really hope that all of the news has been like, he's like writing it and directing it and all of this. I really hope that they get like a woman to at least work with him on the script or something, because like otherwise there is no reason to not do that. That's like super problematic. And your point about like women should be directing all movies is obviously true, but like at the minimum, they should be directing these movies. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's all very like theoretical right now, because we have no idea what it's going to be like, what it's going to be like. But yeah, my skepticism is definitely based on the superhero movies that he has directed that we have seen that I did not enjoy at all. And like, although I've really liked all of his TV stuff, that's like a totally different sort of playground that he's in. So yeah, I just sigh. Like, I just had a big sigh when I saw this. Like, cool. I mean, fine. Of course, it's Joss Whedon. Like, whatever.
Yeah. See, I think, and that's it. And that's like basically my point about all the like Batman stuff that he's talked about in the past, is that I feel like he probably has a very specific vision for Batgirl, that he was like, I want to do it this way, DC, here's my thing. And they were like, oh, that sounds great, Joss Whedon, let's come do that for us. Which isn't necessarily to say that it's going to be great, but it makes me feel like maybe it might be. And I'm like excited to see what he could do with a property that he cares so much about. I think it's also that because you're so right in that at minimum, women should be directing these things. And I feel like that's true. And I also just kind of feel like I know that's not the world we live in, but the world in which, sure, men can direct female-led superhero movies because they're just superhero movies. Meanwhile, a woman is doing the big Infinity War, you know, or a woman is doing Thor, or a woman is doing whatever the hell, because, you know, it actually, directors and specific visions, you know, it can all lead to really good things. And it's just a frustrating situation all around. And I'm definitely not sort of saying that I'm dismissing any of the concerns, because I think I do share them, definitely. I think I'm also just coming at it maybe more benevolent towards it, because I probably enjoy Joss Whedon's stuff a little bit more, like just his way of telling stories I like in general. But yeah, no, I see what you mean. It's a frustrating situation.
All right, let's jump over to TV now. And I kind of yelled about this on Patreon last week, so I guess we won't go into it too much. But the Handmaid's Tale trailer dropped actually right before we were going to record our last episode, the episode that did not happen. And I had to give it a shout out because it was amazing. I don't know if you guys caught it. This was the trailer, the first anything we've kind of seen of the Handmaid's Tale adaptation of the book by Margaret Atwood that's coming on Hulu, I think later this month. It's like really soon now that it's going to start being streamed. So starring Elizabeth Moss, and basically if you watch this and don't feel like rage and anger about the world, then like, who are you? But let's just say that it's a very pertinent story for our time currently, and really like looks like it's going to be done really, really well. I love this book. It's one of my favorite books, and everything that we have seen, everything that they showed in the trailer, like it gave me the same feeling I had when I read the book for the first time, which, as I said on Twitter, was just like to burn everything down. And I think Elizabeth Moss is going to be really great. I think the whole cast is going to be great. It looks like they're doing something really cool with it, and I'm very, very excited. So yeah. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm so glad that I've read the book, so I know what the hype is about.
Yeah, but I think you could watch this without reading the book. Like, I think if people haven't read the book, if you watch the trailer, like, you'll get it. You will get what this is about and sort of what they're doing with it. And I think probably you'll be able to get through the whole adaptation without reading it, and then you can, like, go back and experience the joy and wisdom that is Margaret Atwood afterwards, if you felt so inclined.
I think that's like my whole thing with it, because I watched the trailer and I really like it, really intrigues me, but I've never read the book. It's just not something I'm familiar with. It does make me want to read it though, because after seeing the trailer, I can understand kind of what they're setting up enough to understand why this book means so much to so many people. I just kind of, it makes me wish I was more familiar. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it like, yeah. people are so affected by it.
Yeah, totally. It's a pretty short book, if that helps. So yeah. You have time. Yeah. I think it airs on the 26th of August. I mean, April, the month we're in. Yes, April 26th, the first three episodes are going to premiere. So people, get to it. You have time.
Okay, so we have a little bit more TV news for you guys. We got the first teaser trailer for Game of Thrones. It's pretty epic. There's a lot of badassery going on. Basically, the trailer is called The Long Walk, and that's basically what it is. It's Cersei, Jon, and Daenerys kind of strutting to their respective thrones in their different kingdoms. So it's just like there's not very much that kind of goes into giving us a teaser as to what we can expect, but that's kind of very... It's not surprising considering it's Game of Thrones, because they like to keep, you know, the secrets and surprises to themselves until the show, the episodes premiere. But the trailer is really, really cool. It ends with Cersei kind of breathing out, and you see like this puff of like cold air coming out of her. And then there's a White Walker. It's just like a close-up on his eye. So it definitely kind of gives the feel that like these are the three power players we're going to be dealing with when season 7 eventually premieres later this summer. And I'm sure we'll see them clash a bunch now that they're all kind of taking their rightful places of power. But I'm interested to see how this series, like this next season goes, because we're kind of coming up to the end of Game of Thrones. So it's going to be interesting to see how they wrap things up, especially from somebody like my perspective, just because I haven't read the book. And I know that like we've all caught up with, like, even if you have, where George R. R. Martin has left things off. But I'm sure if you have read the book, you kind of have some theories as to where this could go from here and stuff like that. I'm kind of coming into it blindly, having just seen the show. So yeah, it should be a fun season, and we're gonna have to wait a little bit longer, but hopefully it pays off.
So I'm wondering, were either of you as bothered by the music in this trailer as I was? Because I could not, like, I had to turn the music off. It was the weirdest thing. Like, talk about a weird choice.
Yeah, I didn't love it.
I don't know. Maybe they were trying to be like edgy or something.
I thought it was weird because the Game of Thrones trailers usually have such great music choices. Like, I really love all of the promotional stuff for Game of Thrones, and one of the things I love about it is, like, they always have such interesting, like, they had that Seven Devils trailer for, like, back for, like, season 3, I think, or something like that, and it was so effective. Like, it was really, really good. So, yeah, this one felt a little off, I guess, you know. I mean, nothing really happened, mm-hmm. so it wasn't, like, super. I was like, oh, okay, they're walking, cool, and like, I listened to it with the music. If there was kind of more action in it, I might have found it more distracting. But I don't know. Music aside, I'm very excited for this. I just am so excited that, like, this story has an ending that we're going to see. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, like, that's really cool for me.
It's very true. Okay, so moving on to something that is also very, very cool. We have learned this past week that Doctor Who's new companion, Bill, we were already super excited about her, played by Pearl Mackie. She is going to be the series' first openly gay companion in the show's 54-year history. And yes, we know about Captain Jack Harkness, guys. It's like the one comment that we've gotten on this story. Like, you can argue until you're blue in the face if his pansexuality and companion status was an oversight, but obviously that's not what they mean. They mean that she's actually, like, a lesbian companion, and that she's the first actual real companion.
Well, Jack was a companion, but, like, spoiler alert, he's not gay.
Like, a real companion.
He was a companion, but he's not gay. Like, I mean,
but he also wasn't, like, you know, like the rose of the
sea. I think Jack is a companion, but whatever, sure.
But that, right, well, you're proving my point. That this is really, really exciting. And obviously, like, when this was all announced, they did it. It's so funny because they did a whole announcement thing in which Pearl Mackie said it shouldn't be a big deal. And Stephen Moffat has later come out and said it shouldn't be a big deal. And it's like, yeah, but you announced it. This is like, except it's not lame. It's basically like Beauty and the Beast all over again. But this is actually really, really, really cool. So it's very, I mean, obviously, Doctor Who is, British TV in general is leagues ahead when it comes to representation and compared to American television. But just speaking about something like Doctor Who, their sort of international audience, they're great with representation. Just not, you know, we're still waiting for things like a black or non-white doctor, or a female doctor, or both, or more a diverse sexuality, confirmed sexuality for the companions, because obviously Clara was also bisexual in theory, even though that was never, like, confirmed. This is just so awesome. It's, you know, Mackie said herself, it's not the main thing that defines her character. It's a part of her. It's something she's very happy and very comfortable with, and I don't know, just really cool all around. And it's sort of like, because, you know, like, Vastra and Jenny was also, like, really good representation, but they weren't really companions either. So I don't know, it's really cool. Like, I was already sort of gonna check in to watch Bill and the Doctor because I was excited to see that constellation. And now I'm just, like, even more excited.
Yeah, I mean, No, it's really great. I have a lot of issues with Doctor Who, but I will definitely give them props for their depiction of like sexuality. They have had representation for ages, especially across their various spin-offs. So like Torchwood, and I have not yet been able to see Class, but like on Class as well is my understanding. So
yeah,
like so they have been sort of on this for a while, and obviously it's great that it's like that we now have a companion, but like, I mean, yeah, they've kind of been doing this for a while. So that's good. Just doubling down. I will still not be watching this. I'm not watching until Stephen Moffat leaves for my own sanity. Okay. And another piece of TV news, we have some good and bad news for fans of the Mindy Project, myself included. The good news is that finale that you just watched was not the series finale, as some people were concerned about. Bad news, next season it will be. Mindy Kaling has announced that it's going to be wrapping up after season 6, which I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on this because the Mindy Project seems like one of those shows that could sort of just continue forever. So I'm kind of excited that there's an end point and that we'll see things wrapped up, and then Mindy Kaling will be able to go and do other projects because I love her and I want her to do everything. And I thought that the finale that aired, the season 5 finale that just aired on Hulu, would have been like a good series finale had it not been coming back for season 6. But of course, I'm very excited to be getting more. So it'll be back in September and it'll be wrapping up Mindy's story. And then we'll see, I guess, what Mindy Kaling does next.
I'm so sad, but also so excited to see what she will do next, because I feel like Mindy's been bringing her A-game lately, so it'll be fun to see where she goes from here.
Yes.
For sure. So moving on to some Disney Channel news. This is going to be exciting for any of you guys following the reboots that have been happening lately. That's So Raven is the next Disney Channel show to get the reboot series treatment. And we have a little bit more information as to what you can expect from that and also when you can expect to see it air. So Variety reported earlier this week, I think, or maybe even today, I can't really remember, that it looks like Disney Channel is gearing up to release the new That's a Raven series called Raven's Home as early as sometime later this year. So they're definitely getting the ball rolling a lot faster than fans thought. We actually originally heard about this reboot late last year, so that sounds like a pretty quick turnaround to me. The upcoming series, in case you guys don't remember, is set to star Raven Simone and Annalise Vanderpool, who starred as Raven and Chelsea, who were like the BFFs of the original series, as two divorced single mothers living in the same house together trying to raise their children. Chelsea has a 9-year-old son named Levi, and then Raven has two 11-year-old twins, and one of them will have inherited her uncanny ability to gaze into the future. So I'm sure hilarity will ensue, because that was a really big part of the original series that debuted on the Disney Channel back in the early '00s. So sounds like it's going to be a pretty fun show. I have not been secretive about my love for Girl Meets World, which I thought was really, really well done. I'm still really sad that Disney Channel decided to pull the plug on that. So we'll see how the That's So Raven spinoff ends up going, but it looks like we won't have too much longer to wait if we're interested in that.
Awesome. And then just really quickly, also because I don't know if you guys have watched this yet, but Wynonna Earp, one of my absolute favorite series. It's only one season has aired, and it was a short season, but we're about to get another one because season 2 is premiering Friday, June 9th on Sci-Fi, and the first season is now on Netflix, PSA, so you guys should all go watch it because awesome girl power and really, really just a really good supernatural Western kick-ass show. And the season 2 trailer is now also been released, which is basically like it's really abstract in a way because there's hardly any dialogue and it's just like cool action scenes that in a way a lot of them may as well have been from the first trailer. It's really or the first season. I was watching it like wondering if some of it was old and some of it was new, but it just looks like more of the same, which is not a negative thing at all because Wynonna Earp is so badass, and I'm really, really excited for season 2, and of course more of Way Hot, the awesome female of women ship that where the women wear bulletproof vests, Beryoge's cough. So it's going to be really good, and I'm really excited. So if anyone's looking for a new show to binge, it's a short 10 episode first season on Netflix. You should go check that out before Winona Earp premieres on June 9th.
Okay, so now we've come to my favorite part of the show where I get to talk about music. You guys, I'm really excited for this. Harry Styles of One Direction fame is gearing up to release his highly anticipated debut solo single, and we're actually going to get that very soon. So chances are you'll be getting it right around the time that this show goes up. That track is set to be released on April 7th, and around the time he announced that was the release date for the single, Harry Styles also announced that he would be debuting his solo music in a performance on Saturday Night Live. So if you're interested in checking that out, that is coming up very soon as well. He will be on the April 15th show, which is being hosted by SNL alum Jimmy Fallon. At the time this article came up or went up on Hypeable, we didn't really know very much about Harry's single, but now we know, thanks to a post that he uploaded on Instagram, that it's actually going to be called Sign of the Times, and he posted what looks to be like the album art for the single, which kind of features him sitting in a chair, his back to the camera, looking at a sunset. So we don't know very much aside from that. There's no word yet on what this is going to sound like. There have been some reports saying that he's been heavily influenced by pop rock, specifically like 70s kind of punk rock, pop rock stuff. But, you know, there's no real way to tell until the song comes out. He also did some writing. Well, after he took a break from One Direction, he's written with Meghan Trainor and with Ariana Grande, put out ballads with them. So it's going to be interesting to see not only what this single sounds like, but whether or not it's indicative of his upcoming solo album and kind of what that sounds like in general. He really could go either way, so I'll be excited to see what we get on April 7th.
And our final news story of the day or week is we're going to switch it up now and end with Harry Potter story as opposed to beginning with it, because we have some Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, pretty big news from the stage play in London that they're actually swapping out their entire cast next month. So kind of a little bit out of the blue, this news broke on March 30th. So they're not giving people any realistic chance of seeing the original cast if they haven't already. And I mean, there's some specific things about this new cast that I wanted to get into. But first of all, I just wanted to, as someone who's seen the original cast, I just want to say that I think it's a real shame if it seems like they're really not planning to film it with the original cast. As far as swapping out actors on stage plays, that's obviously what happens. You know, maybe you could have hoped that they would have stayed on for another year. They've only been on for a year, but really, you know, stage actors are swapped out all the time. It happens, but that the original cast wouldn't be considered the quote unquote original cast in a musical that would be like releasing a cast album. That's obviously not going to happen here, but maybe they could actually film something. I don't know. That seems to me a real shame.
But there's no reason to think that they haven't filmed it. Like
that's true. Like there's no,
when they film in a theater, it's not, they don't have people running around on the stage. Like they just have the camera set up. So they could have filmed it. We don't know.
They absolutely could have. And if that news breaks, I think the fact that there has been no indication that they've done that is what has people worried. But if that's the case, obviously that would be really great. For now, all we know is that we will have a brand new cast starting on May 21st. And the new Harry, Ron, and Hermione are going to be played by Jamie Glover, Reki Ayola, and Thomas Aldridge. Helen Aluko is playing Rose. Theo Ancient, which is like the best name ever, is playing Albus. And Samuel Blenkin is playing Scorpius. And they're keeping a few of the original cast members who had smaller roles on to play Draco and Ginny. First of all, I think this is awful. Like, if you, obviously now I feel like it's safe to say the name. I feel like whoever plays Delphi gets like the worst deal, because they like literally they never talk about her. The actress is never mentioned and not named, even though she's like a major character, just because they're trying to like keep the surprise or whatever. I think so. That must suck to play Delphi, either the old or the new one, because like literally no one knows who she is. Second of all, I think that if you look at the picture, I think it's hilarious that the person who plays Scorpius, Harry and Albus, they look so close to Anthony Boyle and Jamie Parker and I forgot what the name of the guy who plays Albus is. Anyway, so that's kind of funny that they found like similar looking people. The guy who plays Ron makes me so happy because he looks like Ron in a way that like, I obviously having seen the play, I thought they all did a fantastic job, but I was never like that particularly attached to Paul Thornley. I never felt like he captured my Ron, whereas this guy, just looking at his face, I'm like, okay, that's fine. That's my Ron. I'm okay with that. I'm really happy that Hermione is once again played by a black actress, because obviously it would be really like unfortunate if they just went back to having her be white. I like that this is Hermione now. I would have liked to see more diversity in the cast, but I mean, who knows what's going to happen in future adaptations. I feel like if I was going to, I don't know if I'm ever going to see it again. I don't even know if I want to see it again. I loved Jamie Parker as Harry, Noma Dumas-Wenny as Hermione. She was like, she was like my Hermione in a big way. And then Anthony Boyle as Scorpius, I felt like they did really remarkable jobs, and it's going to be hard to replace them. For everyone else, I would just be really excited to see what another actor does with it, because I think that's part of the joy of having it in this format, is just seeing different actors' takes on these roles. And as Merrima said, who knows, maybe there is an original cast recording in a vault somewhere that's going to get released. I sure hope so, because this kind of did come a little bit out of the blue, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm really happy that that so many people have been able to see the original cast, but I think I'll always be bitter if, like, everybody else can't experience it either, because have all talked so highly of how it completely just, it like, transforms, like, the story completely transforms live on stage, and we've been hearing so much about how amazing the original cast is, so, but it is what it is. Like, so
when it's coming to Broadway as well, and that's going to be a whole other set of actors too.
It's always just unfortunate when you're not able to see something with an original cast, but again, like, if you're not in these locations, like, the chances are that you will be seeing it with, you know, a touring cast. And and it's like I feel bad getting like being not disheartened, but like I feel bad being disappointed about it, because like I've seen things like Jersey Boys with like a touring cast and it's still amazing, you know? So it's nothing against these actors. It's just with something specifically like Harry Potter, where it's meant to be a community thing, it's unfortunate that not everybody's gonna have the same experience.
Has a Broadway cast been announced yet?
No.
Do we not know that some of these actors won't be reprising their roles on Broadway? I would be very surprised if they're not. Because they often like move people over for that sort of thing. I mean, I would be surprised if we didn't see some of them at least reprising their roles, because like that seems like that might be a smart move, and maybe if they do that, then they'll film the Broadway production if they haven't. But I mean, there's like a whole industry built around, in England in particular, like filming these kinds of shows. Like they film all the National Theatre things, they film all the Royal Shakespeare things, so once it goes on Broadway, they have to film it, because it has to go in whatever the archive is that all the shows go into. So at minimum, like, there'll be a recording done of that. But yeah, I would be surprised if they haven't done it, to be honest.
I would, and again, it would be a thing, because, you know, we always go back to that tweet of J.K. Rowling saying, don't worry, you will see it. And like wondering if she legitimately meant you will go to one of the shows because you have money for that, obviously, or if she meant there is actually going to be a screening at some point in the future in cinemas worldwide somehow, because that would be what we're all hoping for. But until that's actually announced, I could see it go either way, to be honest, because I know she's talked about how like it's meant to be experienced on stage, so I could totally see her like not wanting it released if she has that power.
Well, I think
we'll see.
I just think it's more about money, mm-hmm. to be honest. Like, not to be that person, but like, I just can't look at Kershaw without thinking. I'm glad you really enjoyed it, but I just can't look at it without thinking like it's essentially a money making enterprise. And like, if they announce that they've filmed it and that that's coming, that will deter people from spending the money to go and see it.
So they're not
going to do that until like it's touring at the very least. But what I'm saying is, I would be very surprised if they haven't filmed it and are just sitting on it. And like, they would be not announcing it or anything if they were doing it in the theater to draw attention to it, because I like don't want that to get out. But I mean, if they had just like filmed it and they're sitting on it, and then eventually they'll be like, surprise, we're releasing a DVD, now you can all spend more money. Like, that's kind of how I see this going.
Like, what's probably going to happen with Hamilton as well.
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, there's been no confirmation, so who knows?
Yeah. But yeah, and one last thing I just wanted to say about it is, one thing I'm actually really glad about with this reveal is that they're swapping out the entire cast at once, because I could totally see them like maybe swapping out Harry or swapping out like Albus or something like that. But I actually like that. I mean, apart from the Draco and Ginny that are, you know, moving up from smaller roles, like, it's a whole new cast getting to kind of like, you know, when they cast like movies and they have like different sets of main characters that they're going to cast together. So it's kind of like it's part chemistry casting as well, which I really appreciate. So this, like, all of these people will be the characters to each other like the original cast were. So it's not going to be like Anthony Boyle with a new, I mean, obviously understudy society, it's not going to be like Anthony Boyle with a new whatever. So this is exciting. Very, very cool news. I'm sure these guys are going to be amazing. Whoever is going to get to see them, I'm sure you're not going to be disappointed. But I would be very, very curious when this cast premieres, when people go see them, and if they've also seen their original cast, how they compare. So we will keep you guys posted. Moving on to TV show of the week now. Merima, what do you have?
Well, I have a tweet from one of our listeners, David, who asked if any of us had checked out I Ship It on CW Seed. And I was like, finally, something I can talk about. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but I've watched this ages ago. And so I thought I would do a quick review. I Ship It is a 10-part series that's streaming on CW Seed. So if you have access to it, you can go over and watch it all right now. And it is from director Yulian Kwong, who I've talked about many times on the show because I love her work. And she directed that short film also called I Ship It.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've seen that one.
Yeah, so this is a very different thing, but I was like, based on her producing that, I guess she managed to do this series. So if you haven't seen the short movie, that is great. It starts Mary-Kate Wiles, who a lot of you may know from the Lizzie Bennet Diaries and other associated web series. That is kind of like a Wizard Rock love story web series. It's very fun. There's music. It's great. You can go and watch that for free on YouTube right now. I Ship It is a 10-part series that has a totally new cast. It has a totally different premise. It's basically that it's about a girl and her friends, and she like works in this office and she decides to form a band, and it's not a wizard rock band. It's sort of a nerd rock, like generic nerd rock band. And I really, really love this series. I really, really like it. It's got great representation. It's got a lesbian or like a female same-sex relationship. It's super cute. It's really fun. And it's also quite different from a lot of Yulian's other work. So without any spoilers, I really liked how it turns out and how everything's sort of resolved. I think that's done really well. It's like, it's really fandomy and cute still as well. So if you like her kind of aesthetic, and like, literally, I do not know how you could not, because she is amazing, definitely check this out, because it's super fun. And like, I don't know how long these CW Seed shows stay there for, but it's been out for a while. It's not new by any means. Cause I watched it like, I want to say like a couple years ago now, definitely over a year ago. So yes, check that out. Don't want to spoil it. It's really fun. The music is super catchy. The cast are great and very musical, and yay diversity, and yay like fandom related things.
So, Pam, what do you have? Do you have anything?
I don't. We're going to talk about 13 Reasons Why on the bonus. But I really, like, we're going to work on something for the show, because the more and more I think about it, the more and more I feel like, it's such an important show. It really, yeah, it just made me feel a lot of emotions, and I would really like to do it justice in a different way. We haven't talked about this, but I think it would be something good to plan for, like, maybe a bigger discussion and stuff like that. So hang tight. Yeah. We promise we're not just going to talk about it for patrons, but for right now, we're going to get some initial reactions out there and see about doing something for the regular show for everybody, because it's so, so important. If you haven't watched it yet, please make it a point to check it out. It's on Netflix. All the episodes are available. It's 13 hours. Take breaks if you need to. I know I needed to take some breaks when I was watching, but yeah, two thumbs up from me. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, as we said, we'll be talking about that a little bit in the Patreon segment. I just saw the 100 writers were starting their work on season 5 today, which is exciting. There's a hiatus on now for like a month, which is kind of sad. But the last episode that aired of season 4, which was episode 8, was actually my favorite of the season so far. The season has presented some really key moral dilemmas and sort of explored them in really interesting ways. And I think episode 8 kind of was a big turning point for certain storylines and certain characters, and especially Clark kind of took a big leap, and I think it just gave me chills in a lot of ways. So definitely really, really cool. Episode 8 was fantastic, and now I'm really afraid of what's going to happen in episode 9, but we will see when it comes back. Okay, so moving into listener feedback. Pam, do you want to helm the Patreon part?
Sure. We're still kind of trying to figure out what we're going to do with our $3 tier on Patreon. But for right now, we thought instead of asking anybody who is graciously pledging $3 or more to ask us questions, it might be easier to spark a discussion by asking our amazing patrons some questions. So this week, I thought it would be fun to hear about what some of you guys have been digging in TV. So that's what all of this is based on. Our first comment here comes from Anto, who says, just binge watched Yuri on Ice, and it's so good. It has been ages since I haven't watched an anime, and this was a great way to get back into it. This really excites me, because I've been trying to be more well-rounded in my anime knowledge, because I know nothing. And I've been hearing a lot about Yuri on Ice, so that's really cool to hear that one of our patrons highly recommends it.
Okay, Ashley Bond says, I'd have to say When Calls the Heart, which is a Hallmark show, and as cheesy as Hallmark things can be, I love it. It's very reminiscent of Little House on the Prairie, with the life of the frontier people and the week-to-week problems being solved by coming together as neighbors. But it's a bit more grown up, with lots of romance. And as much as I love the sizzle of shows like Grey's Anatomy, it's kind of nice to go back to a time when seeing a woman's knees was a scandalous affair. Plus, I dare you not to fall in love with the handsome Mountie Jack. Seasons 1 to 3 are on Netflix. Plus, the main character, Elizabeth, is always teaching the little girls on the frontier that they can be scientists and writers and do anything the boys can do. A message women still need to hear today. That sounds cute.
Yeah.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah. Sarah Venn says, I have been loving Nurse Jackie, and we just finished Narcos. Love them both. What was the first TV show you got hooked on? Friends, for me.
I think
maybe Saved by the Bell. I don't know.
I think Doctor Who for me, the old ones. Yeah, or maybe Buffy. Oh. Hard to separate.
Laura Morrow says, I binged 13 Reasons Why in about 24 hours. Wow, Laura, I'm so impressed. I could not. I had to take breaks, like I said. She continues, I never read the book, but now I want to. The series is very visually stunning and powerful and emotional. The young actors, especially the actors that play Clay and Hannah, really make this piece so powerful. Highly recommend.
Okay, Melissa says, there's a campy summer show on CBS called Zoo that totally sucked me in. It'll be starting its third season this year. It's about a group of people brought together to save humanity from animals who have all turned on us. There's a Masato-like company who used a chemical in all their products that triggered something to change in animals' brains. So it's not exactly Emmy-worthy television or even totally believable, but it's so much fun due to a lot of adventure and an incredibly lovable cast who I can't get enough of, especially Billy Burke. Also, it might be kind of funny to ask listeners what show they hate or grew to hate as it changed over time and have a discussion on that sometime. Well, maybe that'll be our question for next week. Yeah,
tune in next week.
Yeah, I love that question. That's a good question. I will have to narrow down my list, so I need time.
Same.
Finally, Alex Claro says, I'm really loving Feud right now. Not knowing much about the real life people has made everything a surprise. I'm already looking forward to season two and beyond. That's actually really cool because I've heard a lot of negative reactions to Feud. So it's nice that someone's loving it.
We also have a comment here. This is from the show notes, right? On hypeable.com.
Yeah.
That's also a great place to leave longer feedback if you don't want to email us. So Melissa left a comment on last week's episode or 2 weeks ago's episode. And she said, just wanted to remind everybody that there were originally two Beauty and the Beast live action remakes in the works. And Emma Watson was signed on for the non-Disney version to be directed by Guillermo del Toro. We're all a little underwhelmed by Emma's singing voice and surprised that she ended up in a musical, but this is how that happened. When Del Toro's version fell apart, she moved over to Disney. I would have loved to have seen her in Del Toro's bolder retelling and someone with a stronger singing voice, maybe even a relatively unknown in the Disney musical version. That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
I only knew that she turned down Cinderella to be in Disney.
I mean, Beauty and the Beast. Yeah, I didn't know this, but also, like, she wasn't contractually obligated to be in a Beauty and the Beast movie. Like, she didn't have to go to Disney if the other one didn't work out.
Well, I guess I'm not gonna go to the other one.
Yeah, like, so I don't know if we can, I mean, it's interesting, but I don't know if we can say that, oh, that's why it's okay that she literally can't do the thing that she was cast to do, but, I mean, cool, I guess. So random. Okay, and we have a comment here from Sam Hella. This was on The 100 Season 3 special, actually, which you can listen to on hyperbore.com if you haven't yet. He says, Marimer's vitriol towards Jasper is everything. He is the worst, and when you think he can't get any worse, he gets worse. He reminds me of kids from high school that I hated, like the kid who was hanging around your group of friends, but no one knows whose friend he is or who invited him. That's very funny.
Oh my God.
Cosign.
I've seen 13 Reasons.
Cosign.
Makes
bad.
Me even more sad.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to Twitter, the first one we have here is from Rebecca Klaus, who says to Pam, happy to hear you loved the first episodes of Prison Break Season 5. So excited for April 4th. That's yesterday.
That's today. in the US.
Yeah, it's my yesterday. It's today. Any chance of a hype special?
Oh my God, Rebecca, I want you so badly, but the problem is that neither of these two amazing co-hosts have seen Prison Break.
Yes. No, you'd have to rope in someone from Hypeable.
Yeah. I know. I don't even know like anybody who's as excited for this silly little Prison Break reboot than I am.
Well, at minimum, you need to do like a video about it or something, Pam. Mm.
Yeah, that's true. I probably will do a video. But I really hope that you like it. The first episode airs today or yesterday if you're somewhere other than the United States on Fox at 9 p.m. And tweet me and let me know what you thought of the first episode. Let me know if it hooked you. Laura says, just starting to watch 13 Reasons Why. I've never read the book. So far, so good. And even Elaine cameo. Yes.
I recognized her voice. And I was like,
they made her look so old. Like, she didn't look old in the Gilmore Girls revival. So it took me a while to recognize who she was, honestly.
But you could hear it, though, didn't you?
Yeah, you could hear it.
Voice.
But they made her, like, she in I don't know, was it just me? Like, in Gilmore Girls, she looked like she was, like, you know, like,
but
whatever,
she was
like,
also,
late 20s.
She was always way older than
yeah, she was, like, in her 30s, right? Playing a teenager. Because she is, like, a vampire who does not age.
Yeah, I think that's why I was so shocked. I was like, oh, man, maybe it was the hair. Anyway.
Yeah. The Lady Ash says, I guess in response to how people are hyping, going to be listening to the Moana soundtrack and moving into my new house. # hype homeowner. Well, the Lady Ash, you're the only one of us.
Oh my gosh. I know. We're still
I can safely say.
That's amazing. Jewel Gamash says, of course you plugged the Goodreads group and I immediately fell a month behind on episodes, slowly catching up and updating. Don't worry about it. Just take your time.
Yeah.
It's good that you're doing
it. No pressure.
We
talk
about
you.
A lot of books.
Yeah.
Kelsey says, big hype out to Into the Badlands. I'm loving Tilda and the Widow. And no, that's not an 80s tribute fan. I kind of wish it was now. Yeah. Kelpie also says, totally agree with the refreshing views of Pamara. Oh, that's me and Marima.
That's Pamara.
There you go. Yeah. Hashtag Pamara. That's amazing. On the 100 season 3 special, a problematic season, wasted opportunities, and Jasper.
Whoa. Love it. Okay, moving on to emails. We have an email here from Natalia who says, hi guys, I just read the article about This Is Us over on Hyperbole, and considering I can't comment on the website anymore because Facebook is blocked at work, I'm writing to you with my thoughts. I mean, that's fine. We will happily accept them. I just wanted to say that the article failed on naming the one storyline I do care about, and the only one that's actually made me cry, Randall. It's the reason I watch the show. I just love that family in comparison with the other characters. I don't care much about or at all about them, but Randall has managed to make me cry 5 to 6 times in one season, and I think it's because the actors in that family are amazing, the storylines are really good, and even the smallest things like William sending that postcard to Beth had me bawling. So yes, Toby and Kate, Kevin, Jack's death. Is that a spoiler? I don't know. I don't watch it. I think that's Milo though, isn't it? Oh, poor Jess.
It is, but there's flashbacks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Not really something that's made me cry or played with my emotions because I just don't care enough. Family dynamics, discovering a lost relative and lies/secrets concerning them, character with anxiety, count me in. That's all. It's killing me not to be able to comment on the website anymore, just so you know. Killing me. But I'm still reading most things. You guys watching This Is Us?
Go on.
No, I was just going to say that I read Kyle's article too. And I just want to say to Kyle's defense, I know that he really cared a lot about the Randall storyline and William. And he wrote a whole separate article about that. So maybe that's why he didn't touch on it in this like slightly more critical piece. But I think in this article, he actually summed up why I'm not watching it, because I feel the same way. Like, it's basically, I watched like 2 or 3 episodes and I was like, I feel so emotionally wrung for no reason. Like, they were just throwing emotions at me and nothing of it really mattered. Like, it didn't feel like they earned all of those big emotional beats. So I just totally just tuned out of it. But I do. I think that for what I saw, Randall's story with his dad was definitely the most compelling. And they're all good actors, I think.
Yeah, they're really lucky to have Sterling K. Brown on the show. He plays Randall, and he's amazing. And I have only seen the first half of the first season. I haven't seen the back half of this season, but I will say that Randall is definitely the most interesting of the three twins. He's definitely like, I feel like if you took the other two away, he could stand on his own just because of the juxtaposition of this idea of like being adopted, and they don't stray away from talking about the fact that, you know, he's black and was adopted by two white parents, and that automatically makes him, you know, an other in both of these groups, and just like his home life and his family life and his relationship with his dad and like with Jack, like his adoptive dad and his biological father and things like that. Like, it is like he is probably the most interesting person on the show, in my opinion. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I'm still watching This Is Us, but I am. And it could be for that. So really good valid points from Natalia. So thanks for writing in.
Yeah. And Michaela Bagel says, hey, Hype, I wrote a couple months ago when you guys discussed the upcoming, at the time, Power Rangers reboot, which was released this past week. At the time, I wrote to express that I was very much not optimistic about the movie, but would love to see it anyway because of how big a fan I was. Well, I have seen the movie and I can report that I loved it. It was really amazing and very surprising. It is fun and corny and maintains the voice of Power Rangers while also carving a new place for itself. It has so much nostalgia and will really please fans with all the Easter eggs, but it also has a lot to offer first-time viewers. It's smart and comedic and very diverse in representation. In an age of overhyped, poorly conceived superhero films, I thought this really felt like a breath of fresh air because it was fun and it didn't take itself too seriously. Overall, what I was most proud of was that it didn't try to seem cooler than it was. It was unapologetically a part of the Power Rangers family and embraced its cheesiness, campiness, and absurdity. Thanks so much for doing what you guys do and encouraging all of us to keep an open mind even when we think something will turn out badly. Love, Michaela.
That's the nicest That's awesome. Thing people have somebody's ever said. That's really sweet. We have one last email. Oh, no, we don't. We have two more emails. Well, this is the penultimate email here from Rachel, who says, "Hello, Hype ladies. I just wanted to shoot you all a quick email and give you my thoughts on the new Beauty and the Beast movie. As a whole, I found the movie pretty enjoyable, mostly the scenes that had Luke Evans and Josh Gad, but with two major disappointments I wanted to get your opinions on. First one came when the Beast brought out that dumb Atlas, and that was somehow a time portal.
Oh my god.
Sorry for anybody that hasn't seen this. Apart from the ridiculousness of that concept, I wasn't a fan of the fact that they brought Belle back to the Paris of her childhood to find out the truth about her mother. To be clear, I like that they gave her a backstory and learning what happened to her mother. I just don't like that this is how she found out. Her relationship with her father was a close one, and the catalyst for this whole movie was a moment when she demonstrated how much they loved each other by taking her father's place. This being said, the subject of her mother was only the only sore spot in an otherwise solid relationship, so I felt that the opportunity was missed for Maurice to finally open up to his daughter and tell her himself. Without this moment, their relationship stays stagnant throughout the movie. Maurice never has his moment of character growth. It would have been such a beautiful moment after all of that happened with them in this movie. When Belle finally tells him she knows, he just nods and feels like they're never going to discuss it. The second major disappointment came towards the end of the movie when the Beast transforms back into the Prince. The entire time the transformation was taking place, I was thinking, yes, here it is. They're finally going to officially give him a name. I was thinking maybe something like Belle would say Beast and he would say, actually, my name is insert here. Or maybe the now human staff would bow when he came out and say Prince blank. But no, nothing. Prince's name has been speculated over the Disney fandom for decades. Some say it's Adam, others deny that, and this was Disney's big chance to canonize the name, and they didn't take it. I don't care if they used Adam or another name, but I feel like the whole point of the movie was that he was more than just a beast, and Belle's journey with him is returning him to his humanity. He even says in the moment he could have killed Gaston, I'm not a beast, and yet they refused to name him. It made me pretty angry because I felt like it would have been such a great moment, not only in Disney history, but also in the evolution of the story to finally give him his name. Sorry for my long rant. I just wanted to see if y'all had any thoughts on those two moments and the impact they left on the movie. Thanks again.
I didn't know that we didn't know his name was an Adam. I thought that that's what it was. But yeah. Now I don't know I thought that that's what it was. Where did that information come from in my brain?
I don't know. But everybody, I thought it was Adam too. I didn't know it wasn't ever officially like canonized.
Do they not say it in the original? Now I'm losing my mind. Like, how do I know
this? I thought it was kind of like Snow White. Isn't like her prince named Ferdinand or something? But like we never hear it.
Oh, is it? No, I didn't know that one.
Isn't that the bull?
Yeah, I think I'm thinking of something else.
The smells of flowers?
Yeah, you're right.
Oh my god, I love that.
It's not Ferdinand.
My favorite.
Oh god.
It's something else. That's the sweetest bug. Stop.
It's not Ferdinand.
But this is a good point, though, because you're right. Like, if Belle wouldn't ever call him a beast, like, she wouldn't say, hey, Beast, you want to go have dinner now? Like, what is she
Prince
calling
beast.
Him? Like,
I mean, maybe she would. We know from the end of that she's into it, so.
She likes it.
It's weird. I forgot that I haven't talked about this on Hype. I just talked about it in my video last week because, like, I only saw it last week, but this movie is so bad. And for these reasons and many more, Rachel, like, many more reasons. I mean, it's just really dumb. Like, it's just really, really silly. It's really, really silly. The whole thing, like, it makes no sense. But these are very good points. And I really like the reading of, like, her relationship with her father, because I agree, like, that did seem a bit like, oh, and now it's resolved, and all right, cool. We have one last email. This is from Kate Arnold, who says, hi, Hype Girls. Oh, God. Okay, what have I done? Marima, you totally Sorry. Marima, you totally spoiled me on the winner of Project Runway Season 8. Pause. This came out in 2010. Like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm Kate. I'm really sorry. But like, 7 years ago. Okay. Kate says, I know the show ended 7 years ago, but I needed a spoiler warning. I also saw it on the Australian Netflix and decided to watch for some light entertainment and got hooked. I still haven't seen the end, but when I do, if I find out that spoiler won over Mondo, I'm going to be devastated. There is also a second season. There's season 7. If you haven't watched that yet, I will not spoil the 2009 season for you. Yeah, I'm really sorry if you are genuinely sad about this. But there is much drama in season 8. So regardless of who you think might win, there will be things to surprise you. Do not worry about it. Kate says, I've also seen Beauty and the Beast, and while I agree with your thoughts on the singing, I thought that it was a thoroughly enjoyable film. I did the musical in high school, so it brought back all the memories. Hearing Home in the score was lovely, and I thought that Evermore was supposed to be a more cinematic version of If I Can't Love Her, which is more of a cheesy Broadway number. Be Our Guest was an assault on the senses. Oh my God, so bright it hurt my eyes, but I still loved it. Anyway, thanks for everything you guys do. Love the podcast, Kate.
Thank you so much for all of the feedback. This was so amazing. And thank you, of course, to all our patrons for their wonderful feedback and to everyone else who listens. We really, really appreciate it. If you are listening and you want to submit any questions or feedback or comments for us, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. And Natalia, we are very pleased to let you know that the podcast section still has normal comments.
Yes.
Can, not that you can also email, but just so you know, that's not Facebook specific. And of course, our Patreon is over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. And that is where you will find our discussion, spoiler-free discussion on 13 Reasons Why. You will find all of our past bonus segments, our videos, and we will have a poll up soon about our DVD commentary, that or movie commentary that we're going to be doing. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, we hope that you enjoy listening and get in touch. And we will speak to you for episode 141. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And I'm Arama.
Bye, guys.